Arizona's news station, KTAR News 92.3 FM. Arizona Votes, Primary Day 2022, with Mike Broomhead.
Hey, thanks for being here. I want to invite you one more time before we jump into this election stuff to help us make a difference in the community. It's one of the favorite things I get to do here is to get out and do things in our community and improve the place we live. So we started something called the Action Alliance, and you can join us in this endeavor, and all you have to do is sign up, and we'll send you notifications. You can find the things that are closest to you and find the things you want to do and just join us if you want to. That's really all there is to it. Just text the word ACTION to 411923. We'll even send you a free t-shirt while supplies last. It's ACTION to 411923. Let's jump into some of the election stuff we've been talking about today and where we stand. They are expecting the next drop, and I don't know for sure, but they're guessing because it depends on how long it takes, that, you know, we've got about, in Maricopa County, about 145,000 ballots left, and these are the early, they call them late earlies. I laugh about all the terms, and these are early voters that got an early ballot in the mail, but either mailed them in at the end of the process or dropped them off on election day. So they're called late early voters. I'm going to teach you guys something. I'm going to learn you something on this show. So the late earlies, there's about 145,000 of those ballots still in Maricopa County, and about 195, somewhere in that area, between 190 and 200,000 statewide. So when they come in so late, when they either are dropped off on election day or they are mailed in and they come in on election day, but they're postmarked before the deadline, those signatures have to be verified, and then those ballots have to be counted. So a real human being has to verify the signature, and if there's a discrepancy, if they validate the signature on the envelope, they match the barcode up, they look up the signature, they look at the signature on the envelope, if it looks like it doesn't match, they reach out to that voter to verify that that voter did in fact cast that ballot. Once that verification process is done, those ballots are counted. So that process takes a little bit of time. So the next drop of what's left is expected, I think, maybe late today or even tomorrow. So the race for governor may not be called until tomorrow, if it's called even then, depending on, you know, what the margin of victory looks like it is. So just kind of updating you on the process. And when you look at people and how they do things, I'm talking about human nature. I look at these races and head-to-head races, and I don't want to make predictions, especially in the governor's race. I don't want to, you know, you never want to say it's over one way or the other. I want it to be fair. If it was the other way around, if it was Karen Taylor Robeson up by less than 2%, I certainly wouldn't be calling it for her either. But trying to look at either one of those candidates and how they line up against a Katie Hobbs, looking at the what I think is one of the most intriguing races, when if you're just from a viewer's point of view, if you're just watching it, is going to be the race for Secretary of State. And here's the serious implications of this, because first of all, Mark Finchem is the Republican. Mark Finchem has been one of the most vocal election deniers that is out there. He has been very vocal about that since the very day that Donald Trump was declared the loser, Joe Biden the winner, whatever you want to call it. He has been on the front lines of election integrity and election denying. He is going against a candidate in Adrian Fontes that was the Maricopa County recorder during that 2020 election. He lost that election and is now someone that could be the next Secretary of State. So that narrative right there is just very compelling to me. I think it's a really interesting, it's going to be a dogfight. Both guys type A, both guys kind of in your face in a good way that are not going to back down. This is going to be a dogfight. But here's the implication. We do not have a lieutenant governor in Arizona. Either one of these people win, they are first in line to be the governor, should the governor leave office. How many governors do we have in recent memory that didn't finish both terms? Happens all the time. Happens all the time. Governor Ducey was kind of an anomaly in finishing two terms. So that's an implication. You know, we are talking about, and it's, I guess, a side note for me. There are some changes that we need, in my opinion, that we should make locally and statewide. The two statewide changes I think we should make is we should get rid of our propositional form of government. It's lazy, raw democracy. It doesn't work, and I can explain why later, but I just don't think it works. I think it's a horrible way to do business. Even if I like some of the things that have been passed in a ballot initiative, it's a horrible way to do business. But the other thing I think we should do is we should shift to a governor, lieutenant governor race where they run as a team like a president and a vice president. I think we should know who it is that's going to be in charge, and that's their job, lieutenant governor, like we have a president and a vice president. And it's not a knock on the Secretary of State. It isn't a knock on either one of these two men that are in the race. It's just in generally speaking, we elect a Secretary of State to oversee elections and do the other jobs that the Secretary of State does. We don't think that is the first person in line to be the governor, but that is the reality of that job. So I think that would be a major change that I make, that we would shift to where you run, and when you become the candidate, you name a running mate, and that's your running mate for the governor office and the governor's office and the lieutenant governor's office. I would love to see that change made in Arizona. But that race is very, very compelling. The attorney general's race. I think the attorney general's race is going to be the one in which Arizona will be focused on right to life versus right to choose, because Chris Mayes is the candidate for the Democrats, and she has already stated very early on in her campaign that one of the cornerstone issues of her being the attorney general is going to be the focus on not enforcing laws when it comes to abortions, not going after abortion doctors, not doing any of those things. Abe Hamadeh is the Trump-endorsed candidate, very pro-life, and I think of all of the other important jobs, being the lawyer for the state of Arizona, being Arizona's lawyer, is ultimately more important than that one single issue. The totality is important. I do believe that's going to be the issue that's argued. And I think it's a smart move, based on what we saw in Kansas yesterday, it's a smart move for Chris Mayes to come out and say, this is the issue. And if there's one thing that when people are voting, and it's the one issue, because if you look, economy, border, all of these other issues are above the abortion issue in the minds of the voters, until you're talking about this one, the attorney general's race. So the Senate race, Blake Masters, and how does Blake Masters now get those independent voters? That's going to be a big question, because that's all Mark Kelly's been going after. If you look at the Mark Kelly ads, you would think that Mark Kelly has always fought for a border wall, and you would think that Mark Kelly is a guy that wants low taxes, and you would think all of that was true. And in the voting record, we're going to talk voting records as we move into this. But that's the way that he is running. And it's a smart move. Let's be honest. It is a politically smart move. Democrats are going to vote for Mark Kelly, especially against the Trump endorsed candidate. You have solidified the Democrat vote by doing that. So this is a fist fight for the independent voters. And are they going to be able to do it? I just think all of this to me is fascinating. I love the head-to-head matchups. But again, they're important offices. They are the offices that are going to direct our country with the Senate race, but it's also going to direct the state of Arizona. It's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. At 11:20 every day, we do something called Did You Hear This? So we're going to do that coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Gee, I can't imagine what we're going to talk about. Let's get caught up on the headlines. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Results are in for some races. But the brouhaha in Pinal was the big story yesterday.
We waited about an hour, and then a gentleman pulled up in an official Pinal County vehicle. Then about a minute later, the election official came outside and made an announcement that the ballots have arrived. They have about 100 ballots.
Isn't the old adage, prepare for the worst, hope for the best?
Yeah, and so here's what happened years ago here in Maricopa County. A lot of people may not have been here at the time, but we had a disaster in one of our midterm elections. And it was, or maybe it wasn't a midterm, maybe it was a presidential primary. It was, I think it was Bernie Sanders was on the ballot for the Democrats. And I waited for 3 hours to vote. It wasn't handled well. Maricopa was the only county that didn't have enough polling places, and it cost the county recorder her job. And she had been in the job for over 30 years, but had been there decades. And it cost her job because voters were so upset. Well, then you take now election integrity in 2020 and the mess that happened there. And now Pinal County had early warnings because they made mistakes with their ballots in the early ballots that got mailed out. They had to fix that fiasco. So they were on notice that they already had problems. To have problems on election day is a complete and utter failure. I don't know the election officials in Pinal County, and I don't know if they're the only ones to blame. But there will be accountability because the people are paying attention to elections. And if this happens when you've already been warned, someone is going to lose their job either by leaving, being pushed out, or they're going to be elected and they'll be unelected. They'll put somebody else in the office.
Former Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill went on MSNBC yesterday and made quite the statement on Republican stance on abortion.
But most Missourians, most Kansans, most Americans want rape victims to be able to terminate a pregnancy. They don't want dog-sniffing women at airports to see if they're traveling to have an abortion.
Dogs that sniff women in the airport. I didn't even think that was possible.
I didn't either. I don't.
That's kind of impressive if a dog can do that.
When you look at Kansas, when you look at what Kansas did, she's right to the extent that the Kansans voted to make sure that at some level that there will be some abortions that remain legal. There's no doubt there. But the idea that overreach of, again, everybody, you want to get in someone's business with dog sniffing. I mean, come on. That's rhetoric. But to a certain extent, what she said is playing out in Kansas. And we're going to find out how Arizona feels because we've got our general election coming up and there's going to be a big difference in some of the races. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the headlines.
In a leaked video, Pennsylvania Senate candidate can be heard making an interesting claim a few years ago.
And this is a statistical fact. Immigrants commit crime at a far lower rate than we do. Sanctuary cities is another policy that I very much support. Sanctuary cities, again, statistically, makes everybody safer, makes everybody better.
So it's kind of hard to hear, but immigrants commit far less crime and sanctuary cities make people safer.
You know, I guess it's all in where you and how you see things. And if that's the defense you want to go with, then go ahead. I think the majority of Americans see it completely differently. We think our laws should be respected. Many of us, myself included, think that we should revamp our immigration system. But there is a great difference between border security and immigration laws, number one. And number two, a sanctuary city is necessary in your mind because they are breaking the law and you want to give them a city that is a safe haven from enforcement of those laws. So you're in favor of protecting people from certain laws, but not other people. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
An elementary school principal in Minnesota can be seen in a video promoting a book. She's super excited to be available.
I also read Jack Not Jackie by Erica Silverman. Phenomenal read. So if you're a K-1, 2, 3 even, it's a really good read. And I really enjoyed that. And I'm excited it'll be on our shelves in the media center this fall.
She's promoting K through second graders to read Jack Not Jackie, but it's a book about a little girl and her younger sister wanting to be called Jack. I don't see how that's appropriate.
Well, that's the issue here is why are we sexualizing young children? Why are we talking about gender identity and things with young children? And I don't want to get too far down this road, but how many of us had sisters? I didn't, but I had close friends. How many of us hung out with girls when we were young that were tomboys? How many girls play Little League Baseball? Are we going to tell them that they are not really girls or they don't want to be girls? Then they grow up to be supermodels. They grow up when they get older or the other way around. I just look at this and I think, why are we talking about sexuality with kids at K through second grade? Why does this principal feel it necessary? What political motivation motivates a principal to sexualize and introduce a sexual topic to a K through second grader? That, to me, that's where the problem lies there. And I think there's a lot of parents that are saying we should treat everybody. I'm one of them. Treat everybody equally. We should not be discriminating against people, but we shouldn't be promoting sexuality to anybody else's children, period. All right, that's Did You Hear This for another day. What we're going to do in a moment is we're going to talk about the economy in a little bit more of a wider scope. When you start to grasp how many people are in debt right now, how many people are barely paying their bills, people with side hustles. But where do we go from here? Because the Biden administration says that this new bill, this new Build Back Better, is going to take a bite out of inflation. What's the reality? Is that true? We'll answer that question as best we can next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. When you boil it all down, the questions are we going in the right direction to fix the economy or to keep our economy ship-righted? We do have a good economy. I'm willing to, listen, I will give credit where credit's due. I will make concessions where I believe they're correct. We have a good economy. Arizona especially has a good economy. The jobs market in America is a good jobs market. We have created jobs. We have kept people employed. We are not seeing we're not seeing layoffs. That's all good news. But at the same time, we have to recognize as a country that we have seen inflation like we haven't seen in 40 years. And history does tend to repeat itself. And I was a young boy in the Carter administration, so I didn't suffer it because I was a kid. I was 9 years old. I didn't pay any attention other than I remember gas lines. I remember that it was tied to oil. I remember that all of this, the Department of Education was created during this time frame. And we've seen what's happened with all of this. So whether we're talking about the Department of Education, so the battle lines will be drawn when you start talking about the demise of the Department of Education, like I think it should be discussed, and it will be deemed that I don't like teachers. I hate teachers. I'm trying to sabotage education. Instead of saying, no, you're wrong, that's going to be wrong for education in America. You may want to do the right thing, but you're wrong about that. It will be demonization of how I'm trying to ruin education in America. I'm one of the Republicans that don't want to spend money on education, and that's not the case. But if you look at the history of this country, does anybody think that the quality of education in the U.S. was better before the Department of Education or now? Let's start there. And if you at least acknowledge with intellectual honesty that we are not in a good place in educating our children in this country, then at the very least, we should need to start changing the Department of Education, if not getting rid of it. That is kind of I'm giving you a platform of my argument. Because when it comes to the economy, Barack Obama said, you don't want to take money out of the economy during a recession. Well, this administration has redefined what a recession is. We have had two consecutive quarters of recession, of receding economy, of GDP receding. You can throw in jobs numbers, you can throw in all this other stuff, and it won't be so severe. We are watching the economy, the GDP, recede. And if that continues to happen, you have other people that say you don't. These are people in this president's political party that say taking money out of the economy during a recession is a bad idea. So why would we do it? Well, the reason why we would do it is because the positives, according to this administration, first and foremost, the positives, according to this administration, is that this is a huge win. I want you to hear this. This I played yesterday. Chuck Schumer, what is the big win in this bill?
By a significant margin, our bill will also be the largest package on climate change ever passed by this Congress.
It will be the biggest climate change. So this, again, as I've stated many times, and I think I've proven over and over again, the number one issue for this administration is climate change. It begins with climate change and it ends with climate change. And I'm sorry. It is something that is the timing is, if nothing else, horrible. The timing of this is absolutely horrible. You've got. If nothing else, to be fair to meet in the middle, we are on the verge of a recession. We have seen one of the major indicators of a recession. And I'm trying to concede here. I'm trying to have a conversation with you. You say we're not in a recession. We've had two consecutive quarters of GDP decrease, backward movement. That is the key indicator in a recession. So at the very least, we are on the precipice. We are on the verge of recession. Why would you further that along with something that even people in your own party say contributes to a recession? The answer is that is secondary to climate change. Secondary to climate change. We are pushing toward things that are straining our economy in the immediate future because they say in the long-term future we'll be better off. The president has called it this great transition. But what he's asking people to do is he's asking the middle class that he's fought so hard for when he talks about his life in Scranton growing up and riding the train to work from Delaware and all that stuff that makes him a working class guy. Those very same people are the ones that get squeezed. They always have and they always will. Had Kristen Benson, she's a retail analyst, and when we were talking, she said, you know, McDonald's numbers through the roof because families are buying value meals. People are not buying the seltzers, the White Claws, they're buying Natural Light. But she said it's the middle that gets squeezed. When you see high-end products, you know, Louis Vuitton is doing very, very well. McDonald's and Walmart doing very, very well. Middle class families are watching their ability to do things slip away. People at the bottom of the economic ladder have subsidies. They have subsidized food. They have subsidized insurance. They are subsidized. They get subsidized college education. Middle class families don't. Middle class families make too much money for subsidies and they don't make enough money to eat these increases. And so if you look at the reality of what's happening, you can blame it on this president or not blaming on this president and their policies. I happen to, at least in major part. They are watching the very group of people that elected them to office, the working class in America that they say they've been a champion for all of their lives and all of their political careers. They are the group that's suffering the most. And at every turn, when somebody complains, they blame it on someone else. It wasn't their fault that gas prices were going through the roof. Oil is set by the prices are set by the world. Gas prices are set by the world. There's no fault in our administration in the uptick in gas. Gas prices fall, they take the credit. They take the credit. So people are not dumb. People vote with their wallets and they vote with their hearts. And the people that voted for Joe Biden voted for Joe Biden because they liked him, because they believed that he'd be a softer, kinder, nicer version of the presidency. And they didn't like the brash, in-your-face, fake news media of Donald Trump, possibly. That's the narrative. That's what everybody says it is. We were going to have a more humane treatment of people at the border. All of these things are what the promises were. And now as those plans are unfolding, we are seeing abysmal failure at every level. The border is worse than it's ever been. Inflation is higher than it's been in over 40 years. And all the blame goes on somebody else and not the administration. And the American people aren't buying it. And I just think there's going to be major changes in the midterm elections. And I don't think there's a chance in the world that Joe Biden wins re-election in 2024. They better come up with another plan. Before we close it out, the last few minutes that we have on the show, we're going to talk about these elections and where the numbers are, where they stand, and the expectation of when we'll have some finality and some answers. All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Thanks for being here. Before we close it out, I wanted to ask Jeff Munn to stick around for a minute. News came out last night. We were in the middle of election coverage. But if you're a sports fan, the name Vin Scully is a name in broadcasting that's truly legendary. And Jeff, you've been a sports broadcaster for a very long time. Talk about the significance of Vin Scully's career. 67 years with one team.
Well, I was very fortunate, Mike, that I grew up in this part. I'm Phoenix native. And I spent a lot of summer nights listening to Vin Scully on KTAR. KTAR carried the Dodger games for decades, and I'm like a lot of other kids of that generation. He was the guy that put me to bed every night, you know, would tuck in with the transistor radio in bed. And he taught a generation of us who ended up behind microphones how to approach games with passion, but also not go overboard. And I think, you know, obviously there'll never be another talent like Vin Scully, but boy, I will say this, we should all of us strive to be the gentleman, the kind human being he was.
When you look at locally, when you have a guy in town like Al McCoy and the 50-year career with the Phoenix Suns, and he's in the NBA Hall of Fame, we would call him an icon, especially locally.
Yes.
This guy spent 67 years with one team.
It's just, it's unbelievable. Michael Kay, who is a broadcaster with the Yankees, and he's in his 31st year, was on MLB Network last night, and he said, okay, if I double that, I'm at 62 years and I'd be 97.
Yeah.
So it's just incredible. The other thing, and we talked about it off the air, Vin Scully was a great golf broadcaster. He did the Masters for a number of years on CBS, and he did NFL football. His last game was Joe Montana to Dwight Clark, the catch. That's not a bad way to go out.
Wasn't he quoted as saying that he knew what to say, but he knew what not to say, you know, when not to talk? That was part of the key to success.
And I heard a story last night I'd never heard before. He had the Dodger call of Hank Aaron's 715th home run. And Vern Lundquist, another iconic sportscaster, was interviewed. He said he heard a story that as soon as Aaron hit the home run, it's famous, Scully didn't say another word for about 4 minutes.
Right.
He told a story he heard, that must be my computer, that Scully got up, turned his back to the field. Why? He didn't want to give in to temptation to say something on the air. He turned his back for 4 minutes so he would be certain not to interrupt the noise of the crowd.
I heard the same story this morning talking about Vin Scully and the home run by Kirk Gibson.
Yeah, and it's by that point, you could almost anticipate that he was going to lay out, and it wasn't quite as long as the Aaron home run,
right?
But it was the same thing. He was always a believer in let the game breathe, and that's even on radio. That's
right.
Not a bad lesson for a lot of broadcasters.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I just wanted to bring you in because I know that
you
are such a broadcast professional, especially when it comes to sports, and I knew you would have a very strong opinion because what a guy to look up to.
I've been in shock since last night. I mean, it's a mixture of sadness, but mostly I'm still just in a state of shock.
Well, people in my business, people in the talk radio side of things, when Rush Limbaugh died,
exactly.
Rush Limbaugh passed away, we looked at that, and that was an iconic loss of somebody that changed the way all of us are and really created an industry for us. Vin Scully was such an example of how to do it the right way for so many years.
Yeah, that's a good example that you bring up.
Thanks, Jeff.
You got it, Mike.
Vin Scully, I didn't want to go out with him. We were talking elections, and I want to close very quickly with that, but I didn't want to lose sight of losing an iconic broadcaster like Vin Scully. The elections, I guess maybe later this evening or tomorrow there will be another drop. There's about 200,000 votes left still to be counted. And so some of these races are still yet, although they look like they have winners, they still have a long way to go before they can call those races. The governor's race between Carrie Lake and Karen Taylor Robeson being one of those. So we will find out more going into tomorrow, and then we'll begin to start talking about those general elections. And again, I'm going to do everything I can, and I know everybody around here in the news department and also on the talk side of things here, we are going to bring in as many interviews as we can with candidates on both sides of the aisle, and we'll start incorporating some of the congressional races here in Maricopa County and around, because we want to help you be an informed voter. Being an informed voter is the best way to vote. And if you didn't vote in the primary, register and vote in the general election. The only way we change the way things are to change the people that vote. It's going to be one of my big pushes to get people that are not engaged in the process to be engaged, because you can make all the difference in the world, and I hope people start doing that. If you're a social media user, at Broomhead KTAR is my Twitter handle. That's me personally, and I would love to have you reach out to me there. Whether you love or hate a comment you see, it's from me. At Broomhead Show, update you on things that are happening on the show, guests and otherwise. And Mike Broomhead, all one word, on Instagram is where you can find me there as well. Keep in touch between shows. I'm back tomorrow morning with another show beginning at about 8 a.m. Until then, have a great day, everyone. God bless.